Hey, yo, what's up, everybody? This is your boy, Jonathan Metz, and I'm here, as always, with my family, Mr. James Jones.
Absolutely not.
And Guillaume Veillette.
No,
that's too far.
Yeah, I'm filling in for John because he's having some connection problems, and we hope he will be filling in. We hope he will be stepping in very soon.
So that was supposed to be like a Toronto accent. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that was my best Canadian.
My best Canadian, Celine Dion.
We have a big show for you. Lots of games to talk about. We're going to do listener mail coming up. And by the way, I know some people take multiple days to listen to the show or don't get to it right away when it's first posted. So just want to say, if you have not yet voted in Retroactive, you should probably do it now because the poll is closing just a couple of days after this episode goes up. I think it's Wednesday, April 2nd is the last day to vote.
Yeah, something like that.
And we're calling it Clash of the Titans. It's probably the only time that you'll ever see Mario, Metroid, and Zelda facing off in a Retroactive poll. And I'm sure that you have a preference among those three, or at least one preference. And we really hope that you'll go and vote. It's been a really good race so far, and we're hoping to get the biggest participation ever for this Retroactive. So please go to the website, NintendoWorldReport.com. There's a link right there, or look on our social media accounts, Facebook and Twitter. You'll find a link to go vote, and we want you to do that. Okay, so let's kick it off with new business, and Guillaume is going to start.
Right, so I got Zero Drifter during the sale. Renegade Kid is having a sale for all of their games on the 3DS, and I think also Wii U. And so I just snatched it up. The game is usually $10, so half price, $5. And I gotta say, like, I'm a huge fan of Mutant Muds. I really like the Renegade Kid guys. But I did not pick up Zero Drifter immediately because I had some concerns about it. And while I played through the game and I enjoyed it, those concerns turned out to be right.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes. The game looks really good. I mean, it's a 2D side-scrolling game with chunky pixels, and there's something about that on the 3DS. Well, you know, there's something about...
I just like that phrase.
Yeah, chunky pixels.
It's my new indie rock band.
There's something about the 3DS screen and seeing that in 3D that's just... It's really, really nice, yeah. You know? Like, Cave Story 3D looks really nice. Ika-chan. This game has bigger pixels than that, but it still looks great.
It looks like Mutant Muds, except, you know, more sci-fi.
This game has the biggest pixels.
You've got this semi-Metroid-like structure where you can explore. You can start out on four planets and make your way through them and try to get a power-up that will allow you to get past certain obstacles like barriers or jumps that you can't quite make. And then from there, you go jump to another planet and you use your newfound ability to get further on that planet, etc. I think I was worried that the game would not really, would only be kind of a facsimile of the Metroid formula and not really, you know, do everything right, because it seemed like the game was released almost as soon as it was announced. So I have to presume that it was developed in a really, really short time. And so I thought there's no way
they could have... 4 months or something like that.
Yeah, and I thought there's no way they could have done this well in that short of a time. And it looks like they didn't really try. I mean, the map sure looks like a Metroid map, but then you play the game and it's very, very linear. There's basically maybe one or two places that you can go at first and you're going to get your first power up. And then that only opens up a couple of places at most. And there's really only one way to play, one correct pathway through the levels.
Right.
And the abilities are very, very standard fare. I mean, you get basically a high jump, you know, that's one of the last few things that you get. But you get the ability to swim, you get something that breaks some barriers down. And so it's nothing really that we haven't seen before, and they only do the one thing. They might help in combat sometimes, but they, you know, it's not like the bombs in Metroid that allow you to not just, you know, open up new paths, but and also are used in combat in a very limited way. But you can also do this trick where you can jump, you can sequence break the game if you're good enough using the bombs. There's nothing really here that gives you that kind of ability. When you get the jetpack, you know exactly what you're supposed to do. You go to all those places that you couldn't reach before, where there's like this long vertical shaft that you couldn't do anything about earlier, and now you can. And
well, the,
that's it.
The one exception to the power that it has that other games don't have is the one that you've kind of seen before in Mutant Muds. It lets you jump between the foreground and the background. I thought it ties into the exploration in this game in a nice way, especially because you can kind of use it almost anywhere that you want to. Whereas in Mutant Muds, it was limited to those very specific platforms, you know, that let you switch back and forth.
I think that ability is more limited than I thought it would be. There's very specific places that you can use it in the levels, and usually it's to give you some sort of shortcut, and mm-hmm. that's about it. I really don't think it's used all that well. It doesn't really come up in the combat. Like, you're not going to be jumping from background to foreground, dodging enemies in the foreground and background. Like, there's nothing like that.
Only in the bosses.
Yeah, yeah. But again, it's very limited. So yeah, like, it's a neat little game. I was done with it the same day that I bought it. It's very short. And I feel like there's nothing to draw me back to it. I'm missing one life upgrade. I see no reason to even go get it, because it's just, I don't feel like the game has a lot of replay value. It's just missing this one thing that would make it fun enough to play to just keep going back to it.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know that Metroid games have replay in any kind of traditional sense, because they do in the sense that they're non-linear, so you can always do things in a different order, and that's where speedrunning comes from. You try to find like the most efficient path.
Mm-hmm.
But in Zeo Drifter, the secret, there aren't that many secrets, and most of them are pretty easy to find. So
right.
That definitely limits how much of the game is left by the time you beat it. When you beat that final boss, you've probably gotten everything that you want to get. But you know, I think Zeo Drifter is really well made and really finely crafted.
Oh yeah, sure.
It looks great. It sounds great. It controls great. To me, it is kind of an example of, it's a case study in how the Metroid formula doesn't scale down very well. You know, Metroid is an ambitious game, as I've talked about a lot. It's a kind of game that's hard to design, and it kind of requires this big sprawling world in order to work, in order mm-hmm. to give you enough options of things to do, and, you know, being able to do things in different sequences and explore. And Zeo Drifter is so small that it doesn't really have a lot of different paths for you to take. And it doesn't do a good job of even kind of hinting at the direction that you might need to go, you know, like early in the game. So what ends up happening is you go to there's four planets that you basically pick from a menu, and none of them are really, you know, indicated as the starting area or anything like that. But one of them is literally the only one that you should really try first. Because
right.
that's where the first upgrade is. And you can go to the other three, and you very well may. I think I did when I played it. But you're going to go into them, and there's really nothing you can do. You'll get three or four screens in, you'll die a bunch, and then you'll find out that you don't have what you need. So it's not built very organically to try to, you know, like, very subtly guide you in the right direction. And then once you are in the right direction, which you're going to find by brute force trial and error, once you're on that path, there's nothing else to do. Like, there's not
right.
really any point at which you're going to get off of that path and go do something cool over here that's optional or anything like that. At that point, it really kind of falls into sequence. So it doesn't make it a bad game or anything, but I think it's a really interesting example of this game design and the limitations on it when you scale it down to such a small game like Zeo Drifter.
Right, and in terms of Renegade Kid games, I think I just vastly prefer Mutant Muds and... In terms of Metroidvania-ish design, I think you're better off going with something like Shantae and the Pirate's Curse. But this game, you know, like, right now it's $5. It is until the April 2nd. And if you like, you know, Mutant Muds, maybe it's worth checking out. But I think it totally is. Looking forward to Mutant Muds, the last levels, basically, much more than I am anything else from Renegade Kid.
I think I'm mostly just excited for Treasure Knots, and to me, that looks like the freshest.
Is that even still coming? I don't even know. Like, what's up with that game?
I don't know. They haven't talked about it in a while.
Nope.
Do we have John on now?
As a matter of fact, you do. I've been
lurking. Oh, snap. So, John and James, I have been informed that you guys have some kind of tandem new business.
Tandem implies things that I'm not sure either of us are comfortable with.
I mean, well, Guillaume and I do not know what you're talking about.
I guess
here,
maybe so. If we're talking like a tandem bike, like James and I are bicycling on...
Down a hill?
Yeah. Together, perhaps singing a song. I don't know. Maybe I'm going too far with this.
A song about responsibility, about taking about adding responsibility to your life in the form of others, like taking on the adult responsibilities that you do when you have a family.
It's not about that at all.
Babysitting mama?
Yes.
What's going on, guys?
Bingo! It is babysitting mama, my friend.
Oh man,
babysitting mama.
So John, I've never heard of this game. Why don't you describe it for me?
Well, let's see. Okay, babysitting mama is a game for the Wii. Released in the fine year of 2010.
Year of our Lord.
I remember it well.
Yes, and it is a rhythm game, like a kind of a pattern matching game in some ways. Kind of reminds me of Rhythm Heaven, something like
does
that
it?
Kind of thing.
Does it remind you of Rhythm Heaven?
I mean, not in terms of quality, but...
It's way better.
Okay, and of course the gimmick is that it comes with a plush baby doll. With a diaper that you can actually attach, like
and
you can actually
yourself.
Like, yeah, I mean, you can actually take it off and put it back on. So this is clearly aimed at children, not 40-year-old men.
All right.
Why?
Go ahead,
because
go on.
The diaper is too small. Or?
I disagree. There you go. Yes.
Oh, that makes it all worthwhile. That makes it all worthwhile.
So when I think about who on this show should have children, who here should be rearing young adults into, you know, taking an infant that can't care for itself to adulthood?
Not this guy, buddy.
John Lindemann's a good candidate for
that. No, he's not. He's not. You have no idea how wrong you are. So, okay, so the gimmick is here. You get this plush doll and you... put your Wii controller into it. I mean, yes, it's another one of these, you know, really it's a big kind of mask for just moving your Wii controller around in certain ways. So
as you
so
do.
It's an anthropomorphic Wii condom.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Oh, well, no, I mean, it's really not a condom though because the baby's already happened.
Yeah.
You missed the boat on that one.
So
what do you do with what do you? So John, how have you become a better father through babysitting mama?
Well, you see, they tell you not to shake the baby.
I
shaked it maybe a couple times.
They
that's
tell
fine.
You that constantly.
Babies are resilient. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean it that sucker. It can take a punch. I can tell you that. They tell you never to punch babies, but this guy, I mean, I can you can haul off and slug
does
him,
it,
and he does.
Does the,
he comes
does
back
the game
for
say,
more.
Look, does the game say don't punch the baby?
No, it doesn't say don't punch
then
the baby.
Fine.
I mean,
you're fine. You didn't do anything wrong.
It's kind of in you know, it's implied.
Implied? Yeah.
Don't
okay.
kick the baby.
But yeah, see this game. It's
So how do you babysit, John?
Well, you do events. Apparently, it was teaching me quite a bit because apparently the entirety of taking care of a baby consists of rocking the child back and forth, lifting
accurate.
The child up, lifting the child down, lifting the child to the right, and lifting the child to the left. It involves actually, amazingly enough,
babies love going left.
Yes,
they love the old go right then go left.
Babies can also race.
Babies are great line dancers. Oh, baby racing! Yeah,
racing. Yes, baby.
Can you
baby
bet
racing.
On it?
I think Ubisoft has a trademark on baby racing.
Yeah, only with a Z.
Yep. So yeah,
babies
I mean,
racing.
I've never seen this in my experience, but you know,
race together.
Apparently,
John.
Babies can race themselves. I mean, I'm sure in some parts of the country you can put money down on these you know races.
I thought we were gonna talk about that.
Hey, I mean, however people want to live their lives, not my call. Let's see.
You gotta be making quarterback money for that kind of action.
Let's see what you can also do. Other events, and all of these are all shaking the kid back and forth. Not shaking.
Sorry. John, what are we gonna do?
What you really mean is waggling.
John, pretty
much waggling. It's a waggle fest, pretty much.
John, this is recorded. When we go to adopt, it's gonna be a problem.
You know.
When we?
They're going to listen to this.
When RFN shows up at the agency.
They're going to say,
oh dear.
They're going to say,
I think
James,
our state laws have a long way to go before that's a possibility.
They're going to say, James, you're fine. John, he's a monster.
John,
we can't have this.
I guess this is, I guess I'm just making up evidence right now, but.
Yeah, and we're done. We're finished.
So, yeah. So, I mean, there's various events. What else is there? You can tell they sort of ran out of ideas because
it's a MOBA game.
Well,
yes.
Yeah, I mean, you start getting into the sort of stuff where it's just like, come on, this doesn't have anything to do with taking care of a child. Like, flies are flying around the kid's crib and you have to swat them.
It depends where you
it's
live.
Just completely
if you live in a
random
if
stuff.
You live in a place with malaria nets, that's real parenting.
Yeah, I mean, you have to. There's a rhythm matching game, spinning the kids mobile. There's one of those. But there's also some that are really out there. Just you can just tell. I mean, pretty much. I mean, after about an hour and a half of this game, I had to just.
After about an hour and a half of babysitting,
hey,
Mama.
I'm playing the game so others don't have to. That's how I look at it. This is my duty. So I played about an hour and a half of it, and I pretty much just kind of like, I kind of cracked. Like I had to get away from it. It was too saccharine for me because it's all. You know, bright colors and everything's cheery. But what's funny about it, though, is the girl that
everything.
Kind of, like, helps you along with it.
Mama.
Is, yeah, I guess. Yeah.
The titular mama.
Yeah, I mean, she's kind of like a Japanese racist stereotype in a lot of ways. Because she's like, oh, thank you for praying. Like, and literally says stuff like that. I mean, it's all in this just, like, it, yeah. I mean, I was like, wow, that's fairly racist. Oh, thank you for praying. Like, very much.
But here's the thing, though. I think it's actually the original voice actor for this game when it came out in Japan.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think it's racist.
It is. They use the same voice actor for both Japan and America. And she is Japanese.
Yeah.
She just doesn't speak English very well.
Ugh.
And they decided to use her anyway for the American.
I mean, this game, this series, this whole series
the
is
whole,
so
yeah,
weird.
Yeah, the whole Mama series uses the same voice actress.
So, like, whatever, you know, just, like, if that's the worst thing they did in a game about don't shake the baby, then, like,
it's
yeah.
It's not the worst thing about this game.
No, yeah. You can open up. It kind of has a campaign mode, so you go through four. Yeah. You go through four events of various types, and then you move on. You know, you choose a kid. There's several different kids you can choose from, and then, you know, you have the first area, stage, whatever you want to call it, and then there's four events, and then you move up to level two. There's four more. Level three, there's four more, and it just keeps going and going and going, and while you're going on, you open up the different events and kind of like they have a mode where you can do each event on its own, and which is actually harder than it is in the campaign mode. So and then as you go along and you know you can choose from the different kids, and with that you can unlock photo books like photo albums of each child in cute poses, and when you open up each picture, you know there's the or oh it's so cute that kind of stuff. It's just kind of like yeah you know sometimes you kind of question the path that you're on, Johnny.
That's not about the only thing you're questioning at that point.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
John, I think you're ready for pregnancy mama.
I think is that one of those like those foam things you just wear around your abdomen and you just put a Wii remote in it and just walk around all day?
Complain about your cankles?
I mean, you already do that. That's fine.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend anybody buying this game, but I mean, it really reminds me of a smartphone game more than anything else. It's kind of like it's very simple.
It's going to be real hard to stick your phablet into the baby, though. That's
don't
not built for that.
Don't think I didn't try, buddy. Don't think I didn't try.
Oh, God. No.
not approved for actual that's, baby use.
So that was way like too much.
10 minutes of pure horror.
That's not okay.
Or is it not enough?
John, you keep your phablet far away from that baby. Not on my watch, buddy.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that is actually, like, aside from just being comical in a horrific way, some of the annoying things about this game is the fact that they don't really explain anything to you. Actually, well, this game reminds me quite a bit of WarioWare Smooth Moves. It does remind me of that a lot.
Does it now?
It does.
No, I mean, you're not wrong. I've played Babysitting Mama with my niece, and you're not wrong. It's not nearly as good.
Oh,
and
no. Smooth Moves is... No.
And Smooth Moves is one of the jankiest WarioWare games for obvious reasons, you know, using the Wii Remote in all these weird ways. But it still works much better than Babysitting
Mama. I mean, you say it's one of the jankiest, but let's go through the list. I mean, there's that DSiWare game that's unplayable. There's Touched, and then you get to Smooth Moves. You're kind of in the middle of the list at that point.
I guess, but it's a mid-tier WarioWare.
Jankiness is sort of par for the course. Mm.
Yeah, but yeah, they don't really explain. There's a couple of them that are really, really hard to pull off, actually, and it's just... that's the thing. There's some that are just brain dead easy, and then some of them that are just like, what the hell am I doing? How the hell do I actually complete this?
Parenthood is hard, John.
Sometimes. I guess. But yeah, I think we've all learned something here today.
We certainly have.
I don't know what that is.
Well, John, I mean,
I'll talk about it in therapy later on this week.
I think you learned about responsibility. I think that's what you learned about. You learned about how to be responsible for a foam child with the Wii Remote shoved up like it's a rectal thermometer.
It's for the record, it does the entry point is right around the neck. So
oh, okay. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. See, I think they changed it after realizing it was a terrible idea.
Because I'm pretty sure the one that was at E3 went up the other way.
Brilliant.
This. Yeah. But that's fine. I mean, that's all fine. Everything's fine.
It really is the gift that keeps on giving.
It's giving what, John?
Was this a gift from James?
No. John bought this with his own money.
Yeah.
During a now playing segment.
Yeah, it was.
Is that right?
This is true. This is, like, when I say we should record now playing, this is what I mean.
The thing is, as James and I
tend to do... Don't give away what we're doing, John. Don't give away the plan.
No,
okay.
I'm not, buddy. Dude, you already fucking blew my cover. The hell are you talking about?
I didn't. Johnny just guessed it.
What? Okay, after you gave a massive hint. But, yeah, see, the thing is, what James and I tend to go off on these tangents about terrible games. And so I was like, Babysitting Mama, that's a terrible game. Let's look that up on Amazon.
Let's do
that. And it was like, $12. Now, one might say, John, why are you spending $12 on this friggin' game? And I'm just like, hey,
John,
why
are you spending $12 on this friggin' game?
Why not?
Good question.
Why not?
That's a good answer.
Because I knew it'd be entertaining, that's why.
That's a good answer. He does it for the show. He's the entertainer.
I do.
Yeah, hey, yes.
And
this has been entertaining.
And we're learning about responsibility here. We're learning, we're cut out for.
There are certain games out there that I'm curious about, such as Lair. What makes this game so terrible? Is it terrible? I don't know. I guess it's just that innate curiosity that just gets me into trouble sometimes.
We'll probably never know.
Mm-hmm.
James, what's your...
So, yeah,
what's your...
I also have been learning about responsibility.
Really?
Yeah, I have a game that's very similar in some ways to what John Lindemann has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I've been working this game for a little while, just trying to get my feel on for what we've got here. And, I'll let the game introduce itself, actually. I think that's how I should handle this. I think, really, that's what it needs.
The fuck?
I apologize. It's being stubborn right now.
Oh, come on.
Is this a Furby?
Yes.
That noise you hear.
Yeah.
Is a piece of garbage not working right?
It sounds like you're setting phasers for stun.
So
setting phasers for fun.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. There we go. Yeah.
Ah, this fills me with delight.
I don't know what we're talking about.
What I have here, you all had assumed I had some kind of game about producing lots of children, and I may have led you down the road to believe that. Instead, what I have is a game called Wappy Dog for the Nintendo DS.
Yeah.
Wappy Dog. Yeah. James, were you in that crazy presentation at E3?
Oh, I think I blacked out. Yeah.
You were there with me. Okay. Okay.
So, what if you don't know what Wappy Dog is?
I have held a Wappy Dog in my hands, given to me by the creator of Wappy Dog.
Wow, E3 just got a lot more crazy than I thought.
I've spoken to Mr. Wappy Dog himself.
Mr. Wappy. So,
I have no idea.
If you don't know...
Yeah?
Come on. There we go. Yeah, he's talking. I gotta give him his space. We'll talk later. It's okay. If you don't know what Wappy Dog is... Wappy Dog is a Nintendo DS game that came out roughly around the same time as Babysitting Mama. Similar conceit in some ways. It came with a plastic... I'll call him kind of special-looking dog, that interfaced with the DS game. So basically, the DS game has two modes. One is the home mode, where I press buttons on the screen, and it plays awful sounds, kind of like Bangayo Spirits. And then a microphone on the dog hears the noises the DS played, and the dog reacts accordingly. He then sends a series of chirps back that the DS may or may not hear, it usually doesn't, and tells me whatever it is he was saying. That is Wappy Dog. I've described Wappy Dog in the fullness of your experience with the plastic dog that occasionally moves around, lights up faces like it's demonic, and actually has some contact points on the body I found out when I was prepping for this segment. It started making noise during the intros, so that was a little frightening.
Your elaborate preparation for this segment.
I have
leveled up. No, rewrite that script. Rewrite it. You come back here in 10 minutes.
It's mad I'm not playing with it right now. I have actually... been given this game about 2 hours of my time, unlike John, who just gave up on fatherhood right away. And
hour and a half, the other, buddy. That's all I had.
There's a handful of mini games that are just sub DSiWare quality mini games where it's like swipe away the snowman while Wappy Dog skates forward. Don't let him hit any snowman, and it's just you with the stylus wiping away snowman off the screen. It is the epitome of tedium. Occasionally, you'll get like there'll be like whack-a-mole, or then it'll be like find Wappy, which is whack-a-mole.
Oh, Wappy, man, chill,
I
dude.
Don't need your shit, dog.
He's going to be done with the segment soon. Just chill, man.
Well, like, his head's moving, too. It's really kind of... Well, his eyes are bright green, and they're just blinking. Like, it's...
He's like, God, I wish John would have bought me. Fuck. I would have been chilling with the Babysitting Mama baby right now.
I'm petting him right now, and they just told my DS one more time, so I'm just going to just do that for a while. Great. So, basically, it's just a collection of mini games and buttons you can press. Like, he's hungry, so I'll feed him. And it'll make god-awful sounds. Like, I'm going to give him a Declare, which is what you should feed your dog.
This is entertaining the hell out of me.
Yeah, so, then there's also an away mode. And away mode is a little bit different. Away mode's like, well, you can't always take your plastic dog with you when you travel. But if you really, really need a Wappy Dog fix, and we all do, away mode is essentially Nintendogs, but worse. In every conceivable way, and then also peppered with a bunch of mini games, and he's yawning now because he's tired. So, in fact, I'm gonna tell him to go to sleep because I don't want to make any more noise. There we go. And Jesus,
that was not effective. Yeah,
that was him yawning, and now he's gone. All right, so basically, it's a bad Nintendog. So you throw your toys, but the thing is. You collect stuff at such a glacial pace. Like, you start with, like, one toy and one food and one minigame. And that one minigame is, let's see, what do we got? Oh, it's a fruit catch, which is exactly what it sounds like. You control with a bucket at the bottom with the stylus and catch fruit as it falls from a tree. It's terrible. And it's, like, 2 minutes long. It's unbelievable. So I actually have gone through and unlocked all of the games. They're all equally awful. You know, it's like Penguin Run. You follow a penguin, and Wappy's trying to help the penguin win the race. It's just nonsense. And there's a game of rock, paper, scissors for some reason where your DS shoots out a string of notes, basically telling the dog what you pick, and then the dog responds with whatever it is that would beat you. Pretty much every time. This is an interesting little thing. Weirdly, it was made by a division of Sega called Sega Toys. Johnny, I presume the person that you spoke to, were they Japanese? because it was published
incomprehensibly. I really did block out as much as possible.
Incomprehensibly, this game was published by Activision.
Okay, I was going to say, when you said Sega, I was surprised because I could have sworn it was in an Activision.
Sega Toys was the developer of this thing.
Interesting.
But Activision brought it over here because Sega looked at this and said, no, what the fuck? We can't do this.
You know, my impression of Wappy Dog from E3 was actually much like Babysitting Mama, actually, the same thing. I probably saw it the same year. This looks like a really cute toy attached to a really bad video game.
Exactly. That is what it is. It's like a really cheap Furby, because it's got contact points that respond to you touching it. You know, it does. But there's no, unlike a Furby, which has a little computer inside it and gives it all the interactions and it gives it the situational awareness and what makes that toy go. All of that's on a DS cartridge, and its situational awareness is the equivalent of you pressing a button saying, I'm telling you to go to sleep. And it goes, oh, okay, it's time to go to sleep. Whereas like a Furby recognizes, oh, you've turned the lights off with my light sensor. It's nighttime.
Can you not even use the DS microphone to talk to the DS as if you were talking to the dog and then have it transmit something?
Buttons.
And it only talks to the dog through the Bengayo. I love that you invoked Bengayo spirits here, but I knew what you meant. So it generates basically a data stream in audio form that the dog picks up.
Yep. There's a microphone on the dog's head, and then there's a speaker in the dog's mouth.
Why doesn't it use the infrared or...
The wire? Well, infrared because you need direct line of sight. The wireless, I don't know. And maybe
you basically need line of sight with the microphone too, though.
Yeah, it could have been cost for the wireless, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, it's loud. The chirps are loud. So, I mean, if you're... The actual instructions say make sure your microphone is turned all the way up and you're within 3 feet of the dog. So the chirping is actually pretty noisy. I mean, you guys could probably hear it.
But it still doesn't really work?
It works about DS to...
I mean, it didn't work very well in Bangayo, as
DS,
I recall.
DS to dog, I'd guess, is about a 75% efficacy. But it won't interrupt if it's in the middle of an animation. Like, if it's in the middle of doing something, it just disregards all chirps that come its way. dog to DS is spottier. But, of course, I'm using a 3DS, and the microphone is positioned differently than on the DS, but the DS had a bunch of different microphone positions in its lifespan, so I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, it's not, that's less effective. So a lot of times you'll do rock, paper, scissors and you'll press rock and it'll go beep, 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 beep. And then the dog will talk back and then nothing fucking happens. And eventually the game just goes, oh, I didn't get a response. Paper. And you can tell that's what's happening because the dog will finish its animation where it's intimating kind of what it's done. And then it'll just be a pause.
I don't want to gloss over this. Are you playing rock, paper, scissors with Wappy Dog?
I am.
That sounds like a poor interaction.
Well, here's even better. It cheats. I did 12 in a row.
The dog with no fingers to make these symbols cheats.
I did 12 in a row and only won one time. Statistically speaking, it shouldn't have gone 11-1. Like that's nearly impossible.
Get good, buddy.
Like, so it, what is the thing?
I mean,
it only knows we're playing rock, paper, scissors after I've already told it what my answer is. My telling it the answer is the response action for the dog to generate its answer. It's like, well, wait a minute. Wait, hold the fuck up.
Yeah, exactly right. That's not the way rock, paper, scissors works. Oh, I'm doing rock. Okay, hold on. Let me think of something.
One, two, three, shoot. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. The away mode, like I said, is just a bad Nintendo dogs. I mean, you wash it, you play toys, you give it food. There's little mini games to prepare the food, but the food is thoroughly unrealistic. Like, I'm not making eclairs for a dog. I found a lot of dogs. That's not how this goes down. I open a can, I get some kibble, and we're good to go. I don't know, it is a cute toy that ultimately, because it is attached to the DS, is less of a toy than it should be. And the DS itself is just, it's just garbage. But I did learn that despite the fact that I know that I can handle a dog, that I grew up with dogs, and I'm actually really good with dogs, I apparently cannot handle a dog. Thanks, Wappy Dog.
Well, maybe it's been clinically proven to determine whether or not you're a good pet owner. I mean,
I should just... I should
it's science, man. I wouldn't argue
with
it.
I should just go let my dogs free. I mean, that's obviously better for them.
Yep.
So I'm just wondering, like, what will you guys do with these toys once you're done? I mean...
I'm going to. I don't
know. You
can't
give them away. Like,
I could.
You don't
hate
kids that much.
No, I mean, no. The doll is bizarre enough. I'm just going to keep it.
Yeah,
prominently,
I mean, the dog.
Displayed. It's
the dog's kind of
freaky. Just super
looking,
creepy.
To be honest. Yeah, I might just put the dog on the on my game shelf. I mean, it's like it'll just be sitting between like four random GameCube games or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like just. I mean, there's already weird crap up there. Like the Virtual Boy stands on top of that shelf. There's like a Punch and Judy puppet of the Monarch from Venture Brothers over there. I mean, it's a weird shelf as it
Wappy
is.
Wappy Dog fits right in with that crew.
Yeah, it's just like, you know what, Wappy Dog, just chill here for a while.
He's gonna be fine over there.
Yeah, he'll be.
They're
he'll
gonna have like
right
the
in.
Worst Toy Story sequel ever.
It's gonna be great. I'm 100% on board.
They're gonna go on a journey to go rescue babysitting mama baby from John Lindemann's house.
Cool baby,
John. Country. It's on this epic adventure.
You're going
adventure.
Nowhere, buddy. You're going. Stop looking at me. Stop looking at me. You're going
at
nowhere.
At some point, they're
going
to have a rousing match of rock, paper, scissors. It's,
yeah.
The whole movie hinges on it.
Right.
Yeah. So on that.
It saves them from the furnace.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Good night, Wappy.
Oh, I think it's dead.
Go bye-bye.
So I want to point out that you name your dog, and yet the game at no point actually refers to your dog by its name. It still refers to it as Wappy. So
that's just between you and Wappy.
It's all all illusion.
I named mine Lucifer just for the comedy's sake, and it still insists on calling it Wappy. So I'm glad we put the effort in.
Yeah, Wappy's really the breed.
Yeah, it's the genus. This is genus Wappus.
Okay, well, I'm going to talk about an actual new and good game this week.
Why would you do that?
Yeah, well, you know, just to spice it up a little bit. I've been playing a whole bunch of Elliot's Quest, which is an independent game recently released on the Wii U eShop. And it's like $12, and I got interested. I'd never really heard of this before, but I was interested by our Neil Ronahan and his review. Where he compared it very favorably to Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link, and mentioned that there's some, there's some light Metroid aspects to it, which I like. But mostly I was interested in the Zelda 2 part because, you know, in the history of video games, I don't think there are all that many games that are really similar to Zelda 2 in any meaningful way. I can think of a couple, like Battle of Olympus, I think. At times, ActRaiser feels a little bit like Zelda 2,
yeah.
But there ain't much, especially recently. This is an area where the, you know, indie game trend of going back and sort of like making a new version of your favorite game from the 80s, I feel like it hasn't really given a whole lot of attention to Zelda 2, at least not yet. And Elliot's Quest is kind of on the front of that wave, and it's really good. I've played it for several hours, and I have to say, you know, for a downloadable independent eShop game, it's very meaty. I have played this game in multiple sessions lasting over 2 or 3 hours apiece, and I'm probably only about halfway through it now. So there's a lot of game here, and it's a big world that you're exploring, lots and lots of different maps and little dungeons of varying sizes, dungeons that don't look like dungeons because they're actually forests or, you know, caves built into the back of a waterfall or a place on the beach that you can dig into once you have the right item. And this game is very nonlinear to the point that you can not only go to a bunch of places out of the wrong order and sometimes find useful things, even though you may not be able to progress all the way through it yet. But you can also get into a bunch of places that are way over your head, like way too difficult, or you have no idea how to even navigate such a place. And you can also basically sequence break this game. And it's happened to me a couple of times, whether they're glitches or intentional, I'm not totally sure. Which might be a good thing, you know, because that's kind of how it was back in the 80s. But there's some places where if you jump off of the screen at a certain place, you might end up, it might pop you back out on the overworld in an area that you otherwise could not get to. And it's repeatable. So it really makes me wonder if it might have been on purpose, because I did it accidentally, you know, more than once. And then I was like, oh, okay, I can actually use that. There's tons of secrets, lots and lots of secrets in the game, which I love finding. And the payoff usually isn't that much. You might find a treasure chest with a few gold coins in there, occasionally more than that. A lot of the areas have, the maps themselves that you're running around and jumping on, you know, very much in the style of Zelda 2, are nonlinear themselves. So a lot of maps have, you know, exits to the top and bottom and left and right side. And there's keys that you find to open up doors. And once you get certain abilities by beating a mini boss or the major boss of the dungeon, you can go back through and get to some areas that you might not have been able to get to before. So it's pretty legit. And the design, especially for the maps, for the different levels that you're going through, I think the level design is really strong. It's the best thing about the game. And it's what keeps it interesting as I play through. The action is certainly looks a lot like Zelda 2 and on purpose, and there's a lot of them. I mean, there's a character named Error who speaks in all capital letters and says a bunch of weird non sequitur type stuff when you talk to him. He's in the town. So there is a ton of like very obvious winks to Zelda 2 and to other games. And that stuff is fun, but the actual action of the game is interesting, and it's not very much. It's actually closer to Kid Icarus probably, because you are shooting a bow and arrow. Your character doesn't have a sword, at least not that I've seen. The main attack is a bow and arrow, and then you get some spells when you defeat bosses. And there's a couple of other. I mean, you get bombs at one point, and they're used kind of as you would expect a bomb in a Zelda game to be used. But you also level up. When you kill enough enemies, you can level up, and then there's like a grid. Just like in Zelda 2, you can put your new level up towards vitality, towards magic, towards attack speed, things like that, accuracy. And it explains, very helpfully explains what the effects are of the different level ups. So you can really decide how to build your character out that way. There's a few items you can buy in towns. There's actually a second town I just found later in the game that has a bunch more stuff to pay for. And you can upgrade certain things. So it's a really dense, rich game. It's a fun world to explore because you can get clues as to where to go from talking to people, but not very helpful clues for the most part. So mostly you kind of make progression by just sort of trying different things. You go to an area, if it seems like you're not really making progress there, it's probably not the right place for you, and maybe you should go try a different one. You find a lot of places that seem like there may be secret areas or optional areas, but you don't really know what kind of power you might get later on because it's not really obvious from the screen you're looking at, you know, what's keeping you from advancing. So it's a really fun and exciting world to explore. The big caveat that I have to put on here, because otherwise, I mean, Neil gave this a 9 out of 10 and, called it like an independent masterpiece.
Jesus.
Or something
he
like
called,
that.
He called it a masterful masterpiece of masterdom.
From the tone of your voice,
actually,
Johnny,
that's actually pretty much close to what
he said. From the tone of your voice, it just seems like I was waiting for it because you're kind of like, it's like you're wrapping everything in a big asterisk, I feel like.
The big asterisk is just that this game is hard. It's really hard. And if you don't have the patience for dying a lot and fighting a lot of enemies that are way tougher than you are, that you're going to – it requires a lot of patience. I mean, it's like the pacing of the combat, I would say, in a lot of cases is similar to something like Dark Souls in the sense that the enemies are able to kill you very quickly. And mm-hmm. So you have to approach them deliberately. You want to attack them from as far away as possible before they have a chance to get up close to you. If you let them gang up on you in groups, then you're screwed. And you can only get hit 2 or 3 times before you're dead.
Wow.
So you really have to play the game very thoughtfully. The combat can get frustrating very quickly if you just kind of go in gung-ho.
How does the game deal with death? Like, do you lose everything since the last checkpoint or what?
No, actually, you keep everything except you lose a little bit of experience.
Okay.
And that, you know, if you die once or twice, I don't think the amount of experience they take away is a big deal. You'll probably get it back just from playing back to the place you died and killing all the same enemies along the way. But if you die over and over and over again, Like if it's like one screen away from the save point and there's just a bunch of enemies over there and you just cannot get through them and you die like 5 times in a row, it's probably going to drain you all the way back to, I mean, you can't like lose a level, but it'll basically, there's a progress bar for the experience points to get to the next level, and it can be emptied out from dying. And that's happened to me a few times. So you will die a lot, and the controls are fine. It's just that the character moves very slowly, especially in the beginning of the game. You can't jump very high. You can't do very much except jump and shoot. And in that way, it's very much like Kid Icarus, you know, at the beginning. And as you get more upgrades, you get a little faster. You can shoot more frequently. Your shots go farther. You can double jump, etc. So there's a number of things that come into play later on that make the character feel more mobile and give you a better feel of control over the action. But for the first, you know, couple of hours at least, the game just plays very slowly, very deliberately, and the combat isn't that interesting because you just don't have that many tools at your disposal. So I think if you're someone who appreciates a good challenge, I mean, it's very old school in that way, which, you know, Zelda 2 is as well. If you think about it, Zelda 2 is really hard, and the action in that game is pretty rough. The enemies can do a lot of damage to you very quickly, and you know, and it takes a while before you start to feel powerful at all. And I think Elliot's quest is very similar to that. Maybe too faithful for my taste, or maybe it's just so different from most of the games that we play nowadays. But I think if you can stick with that, and if you don't mind the slow pacing, I mean, I have to say, I love action adventure games like this. I mean, it, like, on paper, this should be like one of my favorite games. You know, it should be up there with Shovel Knight and Axiom Verge as like these throwbacks to the days of yore. And in a lot of ways, it is. But for my personal taste, I do like my 2D action adventure games to be a lot faster than this. You know, I kind of like the quick. I like feeling like I can sort of run and jump all over the place, and I'm very agile and I have a lot of control. That's why I used to love all those 2D Spider-Man games and stuff like that. And Elliot's Quest is just really slow and deliberate. I'm trying to think of a game that it reminds me of, but I can't really think of anything. Maybe Kid Icarus is the best comparison, just in terms of the way your character
Castlevania
2
maybe.
I wouldn't compare anything to Castlevania 2, but yeah. No, it's really, it doesn't feel like Castlevania. It doesn't.
Okay.
But it doesn't feel like Zelda 2 either. I feel like Zelda 2, even from the very beginning, you know, Link has a sword and a shield and he jumps really high.
Yeah.
And he moves quickly. Mm-hmm. And Elliot's Quest, your character Elliot moves very slowly at first, and he only gets a little bit faster as you get deeper into the game. So that's the only caveat. And for some people, that's probably a good thing. So I think some people will really like that aspect of it. For me, I don't like that part of it as much, but I like everything else going on in the game so much that I want to keep playing. Now, I will say, I strongly recommend Elliot's Quest. I really do like it quite a bit. I think it's very well made, and it's a nice surprise for me out of nowhere. It's on Steam also, apparently, but I don't think it got as much attention on Steam for whatever reason. But the game is a little glitchy. It occasionally kind of hiccups on the screen. It drops frames or something. I'm not sure what's going on there, but it's noticeable. I think I actually died a couple of times because I was doing some jumping stuff, and the screen kind of stuttered in midair, and I needed to do some kind of midair adjustment, and it screwed me up that way. I think it froze on me one time. It didn't freeze, but it did something really funky one time. There's no music on the title screen, which has to be a bug because it's so glaring and weird. When you turn the game on, there's no music for like the first 2 minutes as you load it up and get through the menus and everything.
Perfect.
There's no music at all. That cannot be on purpose. So, and it also, and this is kind of a problem for me. It doesn't support the Pro Controller, so you have to play on the gamepad. And I feel like the kind of action this is, I'm using the D-pad and the buttons, and I'm kind of holding, like I said, it's the kind of game I want to play for long stretches of time. But playing with a gamepad in this very demanding 2D action game for like 3 hours at a time, like my hands start to hurt. And I just don't feel like the ergonomics of that controller are all that great for something like this. So there is apparently a patch coming. The developer's been posting all over Miiverse saying there's, you know, there's several bugs that they're aware of and certain little glitches and things like that. I don't know the full list of patch notes that they're preparing, but you know, I might recommend waiting a couple of weeks to see when that patch comes out.
Was this game previously on other platforms, or is this
just Steam, as far as I know? And I'd never even heard of it when it was on Steam. Of course, Steam is, you know, such a giant ocean of indie games that a lot of things get lost in the shuffle, so that's not surprising. But it's like, I mean, I agree with Neil on pretty much everything that he said in his review. I mean, I really do think it's that good. It caters to a certain kind of gamer, but if you recognize yourself in the description that I gave, or if you think you like games that I tend to like, I think you'll really appreciate this quite a bit.
Cool.
Yeah, I like it. Okay, well, before we wrap up new business, let's hear from one more game that Guillaume is playing.
Hear from the game.
Yeah. So, just finished Persona Q. So I've needed to take a break from, Etrian Odyssey style games. And I do have one waiting for me that I bought during an Atlas sale. So, to take a breather, I've started another game, Shin Megami Tensei Devil Survivor Overclocked.
Oh, to take a breather, for the 3DS. One of the hardest tactical RPGs on the 3DS.
I guess I didn't know that when I bought it. but so far, I'm pleasantly surprised by how easy it is to get into, but I get a feeling that it's going to get really thorny really quickly. This is a kind of strategy RPG, not unlike Fire Emblem, but you've got, instead of having, you know, maybe eight dudes on a big map, you've got smaller maps. Combat is, initially at least, like at the beginning of the game, the combat lasts, it's much shorter to get through a battle. And so you've got these maybe four teams, and they're kind of mini RPG parties. You've got four leaders, and they each can have two demons, two creatures with them. And so when you go up to an enemy, you engage in an RPG battle, and you can get one or two shots at them, and they fight back, and then, you know, that it's their turn afterwards. So it's definitely, you know, like it's the same genre as Fire Emblem, but it's definitely a different spin on it. And there's quite a few things that I like about it. I'm not the biggest fan in the world of Fire Emblem. There's a couple of things about it that really bug me. The whole, you know, permadeath thing was only one of them. And so Fire Emblem Awakening, even though you've got the option to not have the permadeath, I was still kind of annoyed by the random number generator that makes it so that when the screen says that you've got a 95% chance of hitting an enemy, sometimes it feels more like you've got a 30% chance. And this game, you know, because in Fire Emblem, when you miss a shot, that's, you know, the enemies usually don't have a lot of health. You don't have a lot of health. And just missing one shot can make all the difference. In this game, initially, it doesn't really seem to be the case. If one attack misses, you still got plenty of other attacks to fall back on. You still have other recourses. And because you've got so much more health and you've got a team of guys instead of just one, even if one of them dies, it's not the end of the world. You still feel like you've got a fighting chance. So that's one improvement I think this game has over the Fire Emblem series in general.
Does it feel overclocked?
So yeah, this game is a port of a DS game.
Yes.
If you remember, I actually had the original. This is the sequel to the original Shin Megami Tensei Devil Survivor?
Devil Survivor.
No, actually, no.
This is that game.
Yeah, it is that game, but overclocked version. It's not a sequel. There is a Devil Survivor 2 on the DS. There is a Devil Survivor overclocked.
This is the one that I played. Okay, I thought you had the sequel. Right. Because the sequel just came out.
No, the sequel is coming out next month. I'm probably not going to pick it up.
Okay.
But yeah. So I'm playing this instead.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Because because god damn it, Atlas.
But it is very much not only like a port, a 3DS port of the DS game, but it's an early 3DS port. And so there's some jankiness to it that's really, you know, like you can feel the DS-ness of it.
Oh, I mean, it's a DS game.
Yeah, back when developers weren't too used to touch screens.
Didn't
like,
give a shit is what it really is. This is a DS
game.
Well,
it's really weird. Like, yeah, it is. But I mean, there's some menu stuff that's really annoying. You can use the buttons for everything, of course. You can use the touchscreen. All the action is on the bottom screen, so
you can
use the touchscreen to do everything. No, you can't blow on a mic, but
damn it.
There's the fact that there's a lot of yes or no questions that you have to answer, there's a lot of choices, like you can ask your teammates questions, stuff like that. The cursor to highlight your answer doesn't appear until you press up or down or touch the screen. And if you, let's say you've got yes, no, and you know, yes is over no, to make the cursor appear in yes, you have to press down because this cursor is invisible initially and it seems to be located above the yes. You know, like there's some like weird hiccups with the interface that really highlights that this is an old game and like basically Atlas was just starting out using touchscreens and didn't really know what they were doing. But yeah, like it's a fun game so far. The problem is I wanted to say when I started playing it, like, oh, this is so much more welcoming than I thought it would be. This is so much easier to get to. This is actually an easier game than Fire Emblem so far. And then I got to that one mission where I just got my party got wiped out. It's not even that far into the game. I'm maybe like 7 hours in out of a 40-hour game. And I've had to revise my strategy. And I did beat that mission on the second try, but it's not going to be the cakewalk that it seemed to be when I was still learning the game.
So I will give you one thing that you might want to keep it under your hat.
Okay.
This game actually came out in 2009, so all the jankiness of the touchscreen is completely inexcusable.
Right.
The original DS version of it came out in 2009.
Right.
It is hard though. Like there are moments in this game where you're just like, "What did you want me to do, game? What was the goal here?"
Right. Well, the problem is like it's not super easy to find out what enemies you're going to be facing, and your teams very much depend on the enemies that you're going to be facing. Like you're. In classic Shin Megami Tensei fashion, you've got weaknesses. You try to attack the enemy's weaknesses as much as you can, and you try to, you know, avoid enemies that can attack your weaknesses. So combat revolves entirely around that. And if you can attack it with a weakness successfully, you can get like a second turn in battle and stuff like that. It's very, very important. Being attacked can stun you and things like that. So you don't have really the tools required. Like you have to go into battle once at least to see what enemies are going to be facing. And then you like, what, you die or you reload and then you go, you know, mess with your teams, tinker a little and try to make teams that will survive. So there's a lot of, kind of fussiness that could have been avoided if you could have just previewed what enemies would show up or something like that. Or if you could have more control over the teams that you create once you've started a battle. Like if you could still basically hire demons or fuse them when you were still placing your characters on the grid before the battle starts, that would have been good. But I don't know. So far I'm enjoying it. Since this game is supposed to be so hard and it's also 40 freaking hours long, I'm not sure if I'm going to finish it, but I do plan on playing it as far as I can.
Hey, at least you played it, right, John?
Yeah.
What?
What's going on?
I think John and I are the worst about buying games and not playing them. And
that's just a general slam. I'm like, I've never bought an SMT game in my life.
No, that's a general slam. But it gets to me too because I'm getting to the point where I'm gonna have to be choosier about the games that I try to beat because I'm not. There's games that I like, but I have to be okay saying I'm not actually going to play all of it. At least I played some of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I one thing that I'm going to try to start doing more is at least just start games. Like at least play it a few times.
Yeah.
And it's okay if I just drop it after that. But I own way too many games that I just really haven't played at all. And that's
right.
It's dumb. You know, that's
it is. It's dumb. I mean, John's not the only one. Yeah, I mean, in the last several years, I've cut down on my game buying because it's just, I find that, you know, I find I wind up going back to the same games and I'll buy a new one, but I'll kind of get tired of it and just drift back to some of the old standbys. So I'm really choosy. You know, like something like, for example, Bloodborne. By all accounts, Bloodborne is a great game, but I'm just like, and for a second there, I was like, maybe I should get it, but I'm like, I don't give a fuck about that game.
I'm probably going to get it. I don't know when, I mean, but I'm probably...
Well, the thing is, and the reason why I say that, and you know, in fact, I probably would enjoy it more than like all the other Souls games.
Yeah.
The thing is, I have Demon's Souls, Dark Souls, and Dark Souls 2. I don't know if I've ever played Dark Souls. Dark Souls 2 for PS3, I've never even opened that game. Never opened it.
What are you doing?
Never opened it. I'm not doing that anymore. I can tell you that. I'm not doing that anymore. Because I realize it's completely idiotic.
But that's very recent. I mean, like, you just had to have Dark Souls 2 for some reason. Like, these games don't disappear. There's always... You can download them afterwards.
Well, exactly. And the thing is now, I mean, Dark Souls 2, like every single other popular game from the PS3 and Xbox 360 era, is being re-released on PS4 with DLC. Yeah. So...
See, you know what's funny
so
is...
So what I'll probably wind up doing is, honestly, just selling the copy of Dark Souls 2 I haven't opened.
I would try playing the retail game first and then worry about the DLC.
Oh, I don't give a shit about that. Well, the thing is, I haven't opened it.
We'll never get to the DLC. Trust me.
No.
I'll probably never get to it.
I should just sell it and forget about the entire fucking series, to be honest with you.
You know. Here's what I would recommend.
John,
chill. Chill. The baby's listening. The baby's listening, and they learn from
Not
you.
Not in front of baby.
So, what I'm going to recommend
earmuffs,
you do.
Earmuffs.
Shh. Calm. Find your center. First... Go to the store after we're done, like a Walmart, like a 24-hour place. I know you're going to have to leave your hippy-dippy town to go find a Walmart, but go find one. And go buy a copy of Bloodborne, and then put it on your shelf and just stare at it for the next 6 hours.
Okay. Anyway, I'm done with the...
Diversion therapy.
Talking about SMT.
Okay, well, that's plenty of new business for this week. We've got more games we could talk about, but we'll kick them down the road to next time. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got your listener mail.
It's Now Playing, a sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com. Hey, no intro this time. First up this week... I guess that was an intro. All right, whatever. First up this week, the NWR Smash Brothers Tournament. Follow the ultimate showdown of NWR staff past and present as we battle each other on a weekly basis and then post the matches to YouTube with Scott and Neil commentating. Takeaways? Everybody loves Gelspellos on Kalos Pokemon League. The man won't let the RFN boys use 2X Smash.
This is all true.
We were told that we get to change the rule set however we wanted when we were hosting, and then we get to change between fights. So John and I had come up with a list of about 20 configurations for Smash that we think are really works of art.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the last minute, we were told, actually, we're not changing.
Yep.
And you don't get to mess with the Smash settings.
And I mean, we can't exactly file an official protest, so...
Right. This is our official protest.
You know, what are you going to do?
So Scott and Neil, if you're listening...
What are you going to do?
I'm going to find you. And I'm going to hit you with a ladder like this is the WWF.
Although, like, James, I would like to point out that I was the only one that actually won his match this week, correct?
Did you win this week?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah, this week's just pure utter garbage. The most boring Smash configuration possible. No items on the freaking boxing ring. Yeah, it's great. It's super fun. Also, I want to point out, because this isn't going to get into the video because we don't get to do our own commentary, that the reason I'm using Jigglypuff is Johnny thought it was a good idea.
Hmm.
Generally speaking, it's a trolling move, but, you know, whatever. Speaking of trolling moves, we have a review. Zombie Incident 3DS by Don Koopman. You know, we couldn't let a week go by without checking in at our favorite Kusoge master. The first sentence says it all. Zombie Incident is another one of those instances where I had never heard about the game beforehand. Don, we're right there with you. Each and every week.
Indeed.
Look forward to next week when Don's going to have a review about a game that's all about trains that are suspended from above the car rather than below it.
It's going to be a barn burner. All right, and we got a review of Xenoblade Chronicles 3D for the new 3DS by Neil Ronahan. It's remake time, you jokers.
Perfect.
Neil takes the shrunken down port for a spin and lets us know how it works on the new 3DS. He fails to address the irony of the new 3DS's first release being an old game, but we'll forgive him this time.
An old game that Nintendo of America didn't actually want to release.
Yes. Very ironic. All right, and we also have a review of Trine, the Enchanted Edition for Wii U by Zach Miller. Okay, let me get this straight. Trine 2 came to Wii U, but Trine 1 didn't. So this is Trine 1 remade using the Trine 2 engine. Gotcha. Anyways, Zach has a look and lets you know if this prequel, non-sequel, requel, new original is actually worth your time.
I think the correct term is D-remake.
Well played.
You can D-remake with us all week, all the time, especially late at night when you're feeling lonely. In bed. Right now.
Just stop. Stop.
At NintendoWorldReport.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It's time for listener mail, and as always, the address to send us an email is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. You can be heard on the show just like these people. And Guillaume has the first email.
Justin from San Antonio writes, "What's up, RFN crew? Simple question. What games do you want as NX launch games? I'm hoping Nintendo has learned from recent mistakes and realizes they, more than any other console maker, need games at launch. Personally, I would like to see Galaxy 3 and Prime 4 at launch. Side note, if say the console launches in 2016, would you guys be disappointed if Zelda was the last big Nintendo game on Wii U?"
First off, Justin, you live in Candyland. Secondly, we don't even know if the NX is a console replacement or a handheld system replacement, or if it's something else altogether.
Or both.
Yeah, like, yeah. We don't know what the NX is, so...
Well, I don't think it's premature to think about, you know, we have some sense of the timing of the system, although certainly not confirmed. But, you know, if they're going to reveal more information about it next year, they're probably going to reveal a game or games with it.
Maybe. I mean, they could pull a Wii and drag this thing out forever. I mean, even the Wii U was dragged out interminably.
It was. Hey, and I think they paid the price for that. I think by the time the Wii U came out, people were less interested in it because they felt like they already kind of knew what it was. I mean, the people who cared to know what Wii U was already knew way before Wii U actually came out. And then the games it launched with just weren't that exciting for people. So
I mean, you could play it at, what, 2 consecutive E3s before it came out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And still the launch wasn't that great.
No.
You know, I mean, a good Mario game, but other than that, you know.
A good no-frills Mario game.
Yes, like a very, very kind of like basic but solid, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think with NX, whether it's a console or a handheld or a hybrid or whatever, regardless of all that, I have a feeling that it's coming out in 2016. So I'll say that as an assumption for whatever other predictions I might make regarding launch games. I actually think we'll probably hear a little bit more about it this year, but it'll be kind of offhand comments. It won't, you know, it probably won't show up in a Nintendo Direct or anything, even like a very cryptic way. But I think we'll probably hear more about it at the next investor meeting, or there'll be a throwaway line or two at E3.
It'll be business talk, not
yeah,
game.
Yeah,
it'll
yeah.
be like, hey, we're working on this thing. It's during investor briefings, they'll have to talk about it just as it's now an expense. They'll you know, we have devoted, you know, a certain amount of resources to the development of the NX platform. Mm.
Yeah, maybe. And it could be even that as their mobile games initiative spins up towards the end of this year, they may decide to continue counter-programming that by trickling out just a little bit more information about the NX, just to remind everybody that this is not the only direction for Nintendo going forward. So regardless, I do honestly think NX will probably come out in 2016, because whether it's a handheld or a console, I think that's the best time for it to come out. And I think if Nintendo can make it happen, you know, what, we don't know how ambitious or how crazy this thing is, but if they can get it out in 2016, I think either way, they probably would like to. because their other businesses just aren't trending in a good direction right now.
But I would say that 2017 is still a possible launch.
Yeah. But it's hard to say. But in terms of 2016, if it does come out that year, you look at the possible launch lineup based on the franchises that they have in place. I can understand why you might be thinking about Mario or Metroid. You know, the thing is, there might be a Mario or Metroid game this year in 2015. And if that's the case, then forget it next year.
Right.
I have one proper noun that would fit in regardless of what this thing is platform wise.
Yeah.
And it starts with P and ends with Okamon. Because that would be a... If it's some kind of weird hybridized device, that would be a great way to say this is now both. Because you can say this is a Pokemon game. It is this will be subsuming our handheld business. Or if it is a console game, you can say this is a Pokemon game on a console. It may not be a mainline game, but it is something we have not launched a system with ever.
Yeah, I mean, you know it's not going to just be, you know, just a normal console, because it's way out of the normal console cycle of the other consoles. It's going to be something totally different.
But it would be 5 years for the Wii U at that point.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, if they released a normal console, they would be right back in the same boat of having something that's probably, you know, maybe a little bit more powerful than what's out there right now, and then within several years, it would just be completely overpowered by whatever.
Certainly, they're not going to be competing with PS4 or Xbox One in any kind of obvious way.
Yeah.
I mean...
And we certainly aren't looking at PS5 or Xbox 2. Xbox 2.
Yeah.
Anytime soon. I mean, that's years and years away for either one of those systems, if they ever happen at all. So, I agree with you, John, that Nintendo is definitely looking at... They're completely askew of their supposed competition.
I just can't see Nintendo, like, I really wonder, it really depends who this new system is for. Like, if it's really for broad appeal, it could be less powerful, it could be cheaper, and I'm kind of wondering if franchises like Animal Crossing might not skip the Wii U and just show up on the NX.
Yeah. I don't think there's a ton to be gained from an Animal Crossing on Wii U. Like, I know people have talked about that, but I feel like people in Japan are the majority of the market for Animal Crossing. I mean, it's popular everywhere, but it's most popular in Japan. And those people don't want it on Wii U. They don't want it on any console.
I just wonder, like, my concern would be, would people buy, you know, is it really early adopters who would get an Animal Crossing game? But then again, if Nintendo is aiming to reproduce the phenomenon that the Wii was, Maybe they're going to make their console significantly less pricey than anything else out there, and they're going to try to attract really the general audience. And then I think Animal Crossing wouldn't be out of place.
It wouldn't have to be tremendously less powerful, because the PS4 and Xbox One, God damn it, both launched for the first time I can remember, at a substantial power disadvantage to, you know, not even a really high-end PC. Like, the components in those systems aren't the world's most expensive components.
No, and they are both very much made of PC components.
Well, and here's the thing.
There's not really any, like, specialized graphics chips or anything in either one of those systems.
And here's the thing. And we talk about, you know, Nintendo's using those IBM chips they've been using forever. But, I mean, they're not super specialized either. I mean, there's no reason why this thing couldn't be at least as powerful as those two systems a year plus from now and still be fairly affordable. Because it's not, those systems aren't the, you know, they aren't, they're considerably more powerful than their predecessors, but they're not thumping power machines either.
Yeah.
No, they also launched at $400 and $500 respectively, and, you know, Nintendo still is selling the Wii U at approximately $300.
Right.
So I think that looms large over this conversation.
I just don't think releasing an underpowered system is going to be like, oh, yeah, let's do that again. This will be fun.
It won't be underpowered for what Nintendo wants it to do, but it really depends on that. I mean, I don't think they're interested in whether it's as powerful or more or less powerful than the other consoles.
Yeah,
I think they're going to have some plan, some marketing strategy for how this thing's going to be used and the kinds of games that they want to be played on it. And then they'll power the chips and everything inside of it to do that. You know, I mean, the Wii U is basically the system architecture is basically sized or scaled for two things. Number one, it has to play Nintendo's games in HD, which it does. And number two, it has to power that gamepad, which it does. And everything else is kind of irrelevant to Wii U. I mean, they basically didn't put any hardware features in there that don't support those two things.
Yeah, but that's not really been working out so great.
Well,
I mean, I think...
But the system does what they wanted it to do. That's my point.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't sell. It doesn't
sell. That's how they designed
the system. It doesn't do what they wanted it to
do. Well, the idea was bad in the first place, but the machine does exactly what they... It works exactly the way that they envisioned it and the way that they, you know, projected it to us way back in 2011 when they first showed it at E3. And I think whatever this idea, whatever the idea of NX is, all the hardware inside will be tuned to do exactly that and no more. That's how Nintendo works. That's how they keep the cost down.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you'll see. I mean, it's going to be something with kind of a marriage of some sort of portable component and a base console, much like the Wii U, except it may actually be sensible. Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to, you know, because everything that they've said indicates that they're moving towards this kind of one architecture across multiple.
But again, he's been having these little
platforms
for a while. But I mean, a lot of times he seems to be talking in terms of like operating systems and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I think that's going to be.
You can run an operating system on lots of hardware.
Like, yeah, then I think that's kind of the point. I think it's going to be something like they're going to have a base console and optionally. You're going to have some sort of portable component where you can buy it and it's running the same OS and you'll be able to maybe download a game, take it on the go.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I think I think NX could very well be multiple pieces of hardware.
Yeah.
I think it could be there's an NX console and an NX handheld and they're compatible with each other and they connect to each other and you can play the same or similar games on both and they have the same interface, but they're but maybe they're purchased separately, you know, that could even be the case.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily think it's this one thing that's like a transformer system or anything. I think it could be it'd be like the iPhone and the iPad, you know, they're both on the same platform essentially, but they're purchased separately and they work independently of each other.
It's going to be glasses for 3D.
And I still really like my little Pico projector idea. I still think that's, you know, I mean, it's fantasy. That's my idea out of the blue, but I do think it fits with a lot of the things.
I've used those things. They're less than ideal.
Yeah, the technology may not be quite up to snuff, but you know, we'll see.
I did once have a Dell rep try to sell those to us, and they're incredibly shock resistant and resilient, and then just sort of banged it on the table and it broke.
Nice job.
Now, in terms of Zelda being the last big Nintendo game on Wii U, I think it probably will be.
It depends what you define as
Zelda
big.
Is usually the biggest game on whatever system it comes out on in terms of scope. You know,
I mean, they just don't seem to care about Metroid. So what else? Where else are they going to go?
Well,
I mean, they're already doing Star Fox. So,
I mean, here's the thing: Zelda may launch in November. It may launch in October. There may be a game behind it. I mean, it depends on what you define as big. They may release some mid-sized games, you know, in 2016 in the lead up to whatever NX is, assuming it comes out in 2016. If it doesn't come out in 2016, they got to release something.
Oh yeah. Yep.
I think there's probably at least one or two more games behind Zelda that were, you know, either long runners that have been taking a long time to make or are just, you know, not Zelda size big, but decent sized games.
Yeah, there'll be marquee titles next year for Wii U. But I mean, do I think they're going to try to one up Zelda next holiday season?
No. But I mean, you only have one biggest game on your system, and it's going to be one of the two games coming out this year.
Yeah, it's either Xenoblade or Zelda.
Because I mean, those games are enormous. Those games are gigantic.
I mean, you mentioned Star Fox, but Star Fox is relatively it's an arcade-style game, basically. Yeah, I mean, you know, from what we expect, at least from what we've been led to expect, it's probably kind of a medium sized experience.
I mean, you could make. I mean, they could do another new Super Mario Brothers game if they felt like it.
I mean, I think Yoshi is going to be a meatier experience than Star Fox.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
I think if you look at Shake It and
I see even, the thread
even Kirby's
Epic
Yarn, there's a lot of material in those games. No pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this year will be great for Wii U. You know, you got Splatoon coming out in a couple of months, which I have concerns about that game, but I still think it'll be really fun. I think the online is going to be
we'll see
disappointing. But,
well, I mean, we already know we're going to have to use Skype, which we called like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
But I
Skype
mean,
tune.
Yeah, there's going to be. We discussed this yesterday, but I mean, the Smash DLC plans are probably going to come out.
Yeah, Smash will be like.
There
Smash
will be
is
DLC
a game
that
that's essentially going to be coming out in 2015 also. Like, kind of like Shovel Knight. You know, that game came out in 2014, but it's coming out again in 2015. I think Smash Brothers is going to end up being the same way.
The question: what do we want the NX launch games to be?
I'd like to see a new, fresh take on Mario, and I think that is probably the best time for it. I don't think Mario really comes out this year, and I don't know
not
that
with
Wii
Maker
U.
Coming out as well.
I mean, there's already two really good Mario games on Wii U. And I don't really know that a third one will turn or sell more than either of the first two did.
Like I said, yeah. Maker's coming out this year anyway. So
yeah, Mario Maker, right.
They're not going to drop another Mario game in 2015 on top of Mario Maker.
No,
at least not on that system.
But I think, you know, for next year, I've mentioned this to you guys, but next year is the 20th anniversary of Super Mario 64. So I think there will be some kind of remaster for that game, whether that's on 3DS, maybe it's on Wii U, maybe they do both, or maybe they do that as a kind of a quick and easy launch title for a new system, but give it some spin that's related to the NX and whatever is special about the NX.
Yeah.
Maybe they use that to say, play Mario 64 like you've never seen it before.
Or they just dump
them. Yeah, I can see them doing that. That would be so disappointing, though.
It'd be kind of lame.
Yeah,
I could definitely see them doing that because it's something that, hey, the game exists. I mean, yes, it's going to take a lot of work to remake it, but the design of it is already done. And so that's a game that you can get out in relatively short order, which, you know, is important for launch games.
Hmm. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if they just did virtual consoles. Look, N64 virtual console games on Wii U, have fun. We out.
I think there's going to be more than that because, I mean, Mario 64 is, you know, unquestionably one of the most important and most beloved games ever made.
Sure.
And 20 years, and if you think about it, even the DS version came out over a decade ago.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That was 2004.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time since they did anything meaningful with Mario 64. And I think next year in 2016, the 20th anniversary, they're going to go big with that in some way. Something more than just, yo, now you can download it on your Wii U. I don't think that's enough.
In terms of NX launch games, if you know it's something that's maybe a little bit scaled down, that's maybe a little bit more experimental, it wouldn't surprise me if the games weren't completely fleshed out. Like, I think we're used to that now with Nintendo launches. But I think it would be a mistake to try and go again with the mini game collection route. Instead, yeah. I'd like them to go with perhaps games as experimental as, or perhaps sequels, you know, non-experimental sequels to games like Pokemon Snap, you know, or you know, like these weird little experiments that they did, and like, yeah, like maybe a Pokemon Snap sequel like that. It wouldn't be experimental, but it would be, you know, like they would be trotting out this franchise again.
Pokemon Pinball 2, come on.
Coming up with something else that's just as weird and as out there as Pokemon Snap was.
So yeah, I mean it's a fantastic question, Justin. We really don't have enough information, obviously, but maybe we got your brain cells firing there with a few ideas. All right, well let's move on. And John has the next letter.
All right, TK writes, I recently moved in with my boyfriend, who is not a big gamer. Previous to us dating, I was a single lady for a while and pretty much just played video games all the time. My boyfriend is a very active guy and sees spending a Saturday on the couch playing games all day as a waste of time, even though it's the only time in my busy schedule that I get to relax. I love him to death, but he just doesn't understand how important gaming is to me. Do I tone it down? Do I tone it back on the gaming? Or do I continue to reject his proposals of spending the day doing something more active? I don't want to end up resenting him for limiting my game time, but I also don't want him to resent me for something he sees as a waste of time. Help. Interesting.
Oh, I boy. This is a good group to write this email to.
Oh, this is it's interesting. This is an interesting one because okay, first off,
we should say John probably has the most experience with this, and Guillaume sort of after that, and James and I maybe not as much.
Yeah, I mean, really, what this comes down to is, okay, so you're moved in with this guy, so you know it's just like dating someone is not the same as moving in with them, is not the same as marrying them. Three totally different things. People always say, oh, you know, hey, oh, it's just like whatever, it's just like we're married. No, it's not. Totally fucking not. However, what I will say is that this is something that you should nip in the bud. You really have to find common ground here, because the problem with this, and she kind of keys on it, is resentment. Because what you're really saying to the person is, you know what? What I'm doing is more important than what you want to do. In other words, it's really like you're a couple now. You're cohabitating. So therefore,
you've ceased to exist as independent entities.
Exactly. The thing is, there has to be a common ground in terms of kind of like entertainment, right? It's not like you can just say, sorry, honey, you know, I don't really feel like doing anything right now. I'm just going to hang out. Like, you know, when you date somebody, right? You can just say, you know, I'm just kind of tired. I'm just going to hang around and play Metroid Prime or whatever. Okay. And they'll say, okay, well, you know, that's cool. I'm just going to go out and hang out with my friends. Yeah. You know, they'll say, okay, well, I'm just going to go and hang out with my friends and I'll give you a call, you know, tonight or tomorrow. That's easy, right? But when you live with somebody, you're with that person from the second you get up in the morning. And you know what? If they want to spend the day with you and you tell them, I just want to sit here all day and play games, you know what they're going to say? They're going to be like, okay, well, I guess that doing that is more important to you than spending time with me. That's what you're telling them. That's what you're communicating. It might not be what you're trying to tell them, but that's what it kind of communicates. And if you do that too often, that becomes a serious problem, because then that other person starts to wonder, what's really the deal here? Does this person really want to actually be with me, or am I just kind of like hanging around, but they really want to play video games? Like, that's
human
the kind of thing.
Psychology is a goddamn mess.
Well, yeah, I'm mostly projecting here, but I will say that once you move in with someone, you're already spending a lot of time with them.
Exactly.
And I think it's okay to say every now and then, actually, I want to have some time to myself. Even though we live together, I'm going to see you in the morning and every day after that, and that's perfectly fine. It's got nothing to do against you, but sometimes I want to do something on my own, and that should be okay. Whether you go out and do that or whether you stay in and do that, either way, I think you should respect each other's, you know, different levels of interest in different activities. And maybe a good compromise here is to kind of not alternate on like a really rigid schedule or anything, but basically more or less take turns, like going and, you know, like spend a weekend going out with your boyfriend and doing the active things that he wants to do, and then getting him to stay in with you the next weekend or the next day of the same weekend.
Yep.
And play games with you. And in both cases, you should be trying to help the other find kinds of like activities within your interest that you have mutual interest in, you know, which you may not be aware of at first. I mean, if you don't spend much time going out and doing things outdoors or doing a lot of athletic stuff, then you may not really know if there's anything in that world that interests you. So just try a bunch of different stuff, you know?
I mean,
and same with video games. If you're trying to get someone else into video games, don't assume that they're going to fall in love with a game that you already love. I think you should be like, go through a bunch of different stuff and try different things, talk to them, see how they respond to stuff, and try to be flexible and open in that way. But you're still playing video games, which is kind of what you wanted to do, you know? So
Yeah.
I think that's
the thing is, though,
how you have to kind of find common ground.
I think TK needs to understand that she's going to have to give something up in this, right? Not totally, but the thing is,
because then the resentment goes the other way.
Well, that's the thing. Her partner
also has to give something up. Like it.
That exactly. You to, like you. You both can't. Have to you do can't. That. You can't set it up so that one person feels like they've lost. It has to be a win-win.
That sounds like really good advice.
You can't
do that because, you know, you can't feel like one person can't be over here saying, you know what, every weekend I just want to sit here and play games, because the other person's going to be like, you know what? Well, then screw you. Every weekend I just want to be out. I want to be out doing my thing. You can't have it. You have to realize that you're living with this person. So you have to give something up. You can't live like you used to live as a single person and just, you know, sit there and game out all weekend, every weekend, because if you want to do that, you probably shouldn't be dating somebody, or you're dating the wrong person.
I would look at it as an opportunity to just rebalance your activities. It's not that you're giving up video games or that your boyfriend is giving up doing all this active stuff. It's just you're doing more of some things and less of other things because you're sharing with this other person and you're blending your interests together. But also, like I said, I think there's a lot to be said for maybe there's certain things that you do that they're not interested in, and that's okay.
Oh, yeah,
you
absolutely.
Allow each other some small amount of time to just do things separate from each other that the other's just not interested in, and giving each other the space to be independent people also, even though you're still in a relationship, is, I think, a very healthy thing if it doesn't go overboard, if you don't drift so far apart that you're never hanging out, you know?
Yep. Yeah, like that's. But those things that neither person is interested in, they can't be the only things that those people are doing. There has to be something else, like a third pillar, if you will.
So as a counterweight to all this, hey, let's all work together. Winning is all that matters in life.
Right. I just felt like when I read this letter, I thought, well, I'm really not equipped to reply to this, just because I don't have a lot of experience dating, and I've been mostly with Karen, who really, you know, I think has gone more than halfway, has met me more than halfway on a lot of the stuff that I do like. And I just think that she was naturally inclined to like that same kind of stuff. And she doesn't love video games as much as I do, but, you know, she did still grow up playing them, you know, like The Lion King and the Genesis or whatever, or, you know, enjoyed watching her brother play stuff like Zelda in the past. So, very, very much like we're very much in sync in terms of what we like, and the whole active thing, neither of us, like, we both have to push each other sometimes to go outside and do something, because otherwise we would just stay in. But the whole, like, meeting the other person halfway is really some of the best advice that you could give. Also, playing a whole Saturday playing video games is a bit much. But then again,
disagree.
But then again, I don't know, like, because she does say that it's the only time that she really gets to do it. The fact is, I have way more free time than that.
So, I mean, I was going through a stretch where I was working 10-hour days pretty much every day.
Right.
And I had others. I don't know. Yeah. Just the moment you have to get groceries. You have to make dinner. You know, I had to go to the gym. I had other responsibilities. So really, the only time I was playing games was Saturday. Because Sunday, I was spending just getting ready for the week that was going to just murder me for the next 5 days.
Yep.
So, I played games straight through Saturday, because it was like – I had to prep for a freaking podcast I do every week.
Well,
I mean,
and just think, James, if you had a girlfriend, what she would be saying is, boy, you're busy all week. I don't see you all week. On Saturday –
I know. She would be.
On Saturday
– Oh, I agree.
Why don't you want to hang out with me? And that's completely valid.
Because I'm dead,
you know.
But yeah, you're right.
But that's
exactly.
That's the kind of thing you run into, because it's like, you know, and that's valid when you know, and it's okay every once in a while to say, you know, I just want to crash. I've had a really crappy week. I just want to crash and just veg out. That's cool. But when that becomes the norm, which from the tone of this email, it kind of sounds like this could be getting into the scenario where every single weekend this
dynamic plays out.
Yeah, this thing plays out, and what that's going to wind up being is every single time she turns on, you know, her Wii U or something, her boyfriend's going to walk in and say, "Oh, here we go again. Hey, I'll see you tomorrow. Nice hanging out with you." And that's bad. That's where you do not want to be, because that's really bad.
You know, I also, we don't know what keeps TK very busy all week,
right,
other
yeah.
than this one day. So, you know, if she's working three jobs, then this really, I mean, then she's probably mm-hmm. justifiably crashing, and that's going to be, you know, you probably need some relaxation time.
Sure.
I wonder if, you know, like if you're busy all week because it seems like every night you're out with your boyfriend doing something or other, then take credit for that. Like,
yeah, that's already a lot.
That is part of, that is your relationship. I mean, you're living with this person, you're seeing them all week long. Maybe what you're, what you need to a little time to relax from is that intimate contact all the time. Maybe mm-hmm. on the weekend, you do need a little bit of time apart because mm-hmm. you're doing stuff with that person all the time. Or if you are basically doing something, you know, productive and necessary during the week, see if there's a way that you can share those experiences so that you don't feel as, you know, so compelled or so guilty about having to spend the entire weekend with each other also.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's multiple routes you could go here, but it really depends on your particular situation.
Right.
In light of James's story and perhaps TK's situation here, is it also possible to maybe work a little bit less?
It depends on your job. I mean, there are.
She may not have a choice.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. Maybe it's I'm privileged as a Canadian and or as a
yes,
Quebecer
actually,
with
you are.
Some you know yeah. I've got laws protecting
you're
me.
You're basically European, so yeah, you are.
you're also not working in software development, which can be
right
murder, as James can attest, and I can attest too.
And we're you know you're a skilled laborer, which gives you some flexibility and
sure.
freedom, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
So that not everyone has that luxury.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't understand the whole murdering yourself with work thing. Like, I think that relaxation and play are important things. Yeah. And I very much consciously avoid taking a career
because
path.
Because you're in socialist Canada. That's why.
Well,
In America, we're capital. In America, we're money rules
we
supreme.
We make shit happen, even though I'm Canadian. But anyways.
Like you want vacation?
Not
get
for
the
much
fuck
longer.
No,
it
not
might
for
be.
Longer.
It might be colder here, but my social security net is keeping me warm.
You know, what keeps me warm. Fat stacks. I just burn them in the fireplace. I don't even care.
Yep, I just put on my money coat. Yeah, I would definitely though. I would say the key here. There's a lot of key words in this email for me, like. Resentment, you don't want it. You don't
want
to foster that.
Understanding,
understanding is what you want. What you don't want is rejecting. You don't want to keep rejecting him because that's not cool. Nobody likes that, and that's not gonna long term. That's not gonna be healthy.
I do think in a this is the hard part. This is where many of my relationships break down. In a non-confrontational, non-combative way, you know, just have a conversation about. The
yes.
particulars of the circumstances in play.
Yeah.
I was about to say the same thing. Yes. I have a tendency to like overanalyze these things internally and not actually discuss them with my partner. So, I think you'll either solve the problem or you'll bring it out in the open and it'll run its course much earlier. And
you will recognize the intractability.
Yes. If it's a problem that cannot be solved, you might as well deal with it now rather than later. But more than likely, if you're both understanding and reasonable people, you can find some kind of compromise and some kind of solution that makes you both happier.
Don't let anybody get hot. That's the problem.
Yeah, and if it's bothering you, it's probably bothering him.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll both feel better if you get it out there and work on it together. Like don't try to solve it yourself. Solve it together.
Yeah, I mean you have to understand why. He is doing what he wants to do and what he likes about it. But at the same time, he has to understand why you like gaming and why you want to do that.
Right.
All right. Well, that's enough of the personal column here. So, James, could you read the next email, please?
Send your relationship questions to these four people.
Yeah. So these four unmarried fools.
Oh, dear. Ian writes, yesterday Nintendo announced plans to enter the mobile market. Oh, boy. Here we go. With Nintendo's past insistence on wanting to control hardware and not simply become a company that makes games for other systems, how long do you think it'll be before we get a Nintendo-branded cell phone?
Never.
Oh. So Ian, the term that Iwata's been using lately is platform in lieu of hardware. They could still release a software platform that exists in the phone space where they
PlayStation Mobile.
Which Sony just shut down.
Yeah.
Which Sony just, exactly.
Yeah. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah. But Sony did exactly this. Sony said, we're going to create a branded platform where you can play games that'll be certified to run on your hardware, and it'll be supported by all these different phones, none of which you'll ever own.
Yeah.
And Sony actually released a PlayStation phone because they're
Sony's batshit insane.
Well, because they are part of Sony Ericsson, so they have this established hardware, cell phone hardware partner that Nintendo doesn't currently have. But
hey, John, remember on the train in Boston where we just made fun of the Xperia Play for like 32 minutes?
Yeah, it's an easy target.
I could see Nintendo developing a license deal with some phone maker in Japan where they sell a phone that has like Nintendo aesthetics to it.
Japanese phones are weird.
Yeah. But it wouldn't work in any other market. You can play exclusive Nintendo games on it or anything like that. It would be a phone that's made to look like a Famicom controller or something.
Yeah.
And it would be really cool for, you know, if you're into that kind of thing, it would be like really, really cool. But I don't see Nintendo like creating their version of the Xperia Play.
No, Jesus, they are not Microsoft.
Or the Nokia N-Gage.
Yep.
I think you can forget that.
Yeah, they would look at other hardware vendors like Microsoft, for instance, and they would just say, "Yep, no thanks. Don't want into the phone game. No thanks."
Yeah. It's a brutal business. It's really cutthroat, and the margins are pretty much non-existent.
Yeah, and I mean, you're going up against Apple, Google, behemoths.
It's not even them. You're going up against the rise of the cut price Chinese phone manufacturers.
Yeah, and I mean not even to mention them, like what is it, like Xiaomi and companies like that? Yeah, I mean
all of them. They are all now finally saying, okay, we have mastered our domestic market and we have driven out the foreign competition as best we can. It is time for us to go into other markets.
Yep. So
if Nintendo was gonna do this, the time was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And even then, that wasn't the time.
I mean, I don't think it would have been a good idea at any point, but the best time for them to do it has long since passed.
Making phones is hard. It's very hard. And you can't just build a system and release it for 4.5 years. You have to make a new one every 9 months.
Now, you know,
and you can't get away with updating the OS every year or 2 years. You really have to be on top of that shit.
Not if you're on a Verizon plan, you don't. Boom!
Here's one thing I could see. If cell phone technology becomes commoditized and miniaturized to the point where it's somewhat trivial to just add it into other devices, I think you can see some trend toward this. Although, you know,
I mean, do you use your phone as a, what would you be, data? I mean, my phone is 99% web browser.
Yeah.
And text messaging device.
So I'm talking about things. Something along the lines of like Amazon WhisperNet, you know, which is the 3G connection for their Kindle devices.
Mm-hmm.
It is only data, but it's unmetered, so it's unlimited use. You can use it in almost any country in the world, and I can even see, on top of that, even if at some point like mobile voice technology becomes so widespread and so ubiquitous that it's no longer like a differentiator among service providers or among phones at all, then I can see at some point in the future, maybe there's like a phone on a chip that Nintendo could add as like a bonus feature to some handheld that they're making.
Yeah.
Where they say, you know, if you're playing a game and someone calls your phone number, then you could answer it on your system without pulling your real phone out of your pocket or something like that. Like some kind of like secondary functionality, but I don't think any of us would consider that a Nintendo phone.
Yeah, I mean,
that would be phone technology that's built into a Nintendo platform as basically a bonus feature.
Here's the thing. You wouldn't even need to do that though. All you'd need to do is make it so the device could sync as a Bluetooth device to your phone.
Like a Pebble Watch, or an Apple Watch.
That could potentially
happen down the road.
Because doesn't the 3DS have Bluetooth in it? Or a similar technology to it?
I don't think it has Bluetooth, but the next...
Because they would never pay for that license.
The next one could, easily.
But, I mean, really...
Certainly, you know, Wii has Bluetooth. Wii and Wii U both use it for controllers.
You wouldn't need to put any specific hardware in there because there's certainly other uses for that technology that they could implement.
Right.
But I mean, there's the phone games. Just it's just too hard if you don't have your own manufacturing line. I mean,
yeah. And even that is hard.
They do. They have a Foxconn line, but they're already using it.
Yep.
I mean, look at
you know, even Samsung. Samsung is struggling.
Right.
Really.
And I mean, they are on the bleeding edge, and they've had struggles.
Yeah, and I mean, they're on the number one platform. They're the number one manufacturer on the number one platform.
Right.
Worldwide.
And I mean, you have like Motorola. Google bought Motorola to be a test platform. Like, oh,
yeah, and they were like, "Wow, this sucks. Get out of here."
Yeah, this sold it off. This business line is hard.
Sold it off to who? The Chinese.
Yeah, they just took the patents with them.
Yep.
I mean, it's hard. You have to secure, like, that's a big one. You have to secure patents, and that is
you're paying huge fees to
that Cold War
everyone.
Has finally ended on the phones, it seems like, but it was so out of control at one point that if you were Samsung, you couldn't get a fair trial on a patent thing. I mean, you just couldn't. Like, you would go, "Oh, you're in a courtroom that's 30 miles from Apple HQ. Guess what? You're gonna lose." Ha!
Yeah. Well, I think Samsung pays Microsoft like $1 billion a year for patents.
Samsung pays Microsoft a ton patents that they got from Nokia when they bought Nokia.
It's ridiculous. Anyways, the phone game is crazy.
If smartphones were like a luxury item, then I could see there being a niche market for Nintendo to release a really cheap phone that was also a handheld game system, you know, and that could be something they could market to kids or something like that. But phones, the technology turnover is so high, and phones are subsidized so strongly by service providers, and the prices are, you know, the price war is just cutthroat. I mean, their phones are sold for like basically no profit. Or negative profit in a lot of cases. So there's no way that Nintendo can compete with, you know, something like a Galaxy S4. I mean, they'll never design anything that's remotely as capable as that. And if Nintendo says, well, you know, our new handheld is like a really basic cell phone with like really basic data services, but it's also a really great handheld game system. I just don't think the phone part of it is something that anybody would care about.
No, because
you're also going to have a smartphone.
Right. And here's the thing. Here's to give you kind of the image on where the smartphone market is. Even if they designed something that was comparable to the current, let's say, high water Galaxy phone, they'd have to redesign it in 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because to give you an idea of where that cell phone market is right now, it, despite over a decade and a half of trying to proliferate the internet in places like sub-Saharan Africa, Central Asia, South America, it's really
the American Southeast.
It's it's really the
let me tell you,
amen.
Places brother. Where, you know, infrastructures isn't there. Mm-hmm. It's really the recent proliferation of smartphones and these sort of value smartphones that has really brought internet to those places. I mean, like, if those places can afford phones, what's the price game like? It's got to be bad.
Yeah.
The only way to make money is by volume. And if you can't pull volume,
or you go the way Apple is sort of, you can see them going, is like basically go super luxury, you know, like cater to the market that actually cares that your phone looks like it's made of gold or something like that.
Yeah,
because they can afford, a few of them can afford it, and you can make a lot of money off of them. Yep. You're not going to make any money off selling it to people in sub-Saharan Africa.
I don't know that that's a long-term sustainable model.
Think it is at all.
It's suicide at some point.
It's like the 1920s to me, but
yeah, it's literally the cell phone gilded age. Yes. They're literally gilding their phones.
It seems unhealthy, but let's move on. We've got one more email. I don't think it'll take us long to get through. This one's from Thomas, and Thomas writes, "Dear RFN, I recently decided to download a theme for my new 3DS XL. Back in the early days of Club Nintendo, I had picked up their Hanafuda cards reward and always thought it was a neat piece of Japanese culture. I noticed there was a Hanafuda theme on the shop and decided to give it a download. I loaded up my newly themed home screen and a certain tune began to play in the background. Before I knew it, my mind was transported to a place of sheer horror, a place where anarchy reigns, bad eShop games are the soup du jour, and non sequiturs are more plentiful than complete thoughts. That place is the now playing segment, as it currently uses the exact same song from the 3DS Hanafuda theme. At this time, I would like to formally request a $1.99 reimbursement from James Jones and John Lindemann. But even that won't remove this musical demon from my new 3DS. Mm. All kidding aside, I want to thank the whole crew for doing an awesome show every week. I listen to it while grading math quizzes and tests. It really helps make that a much more pleasant experience.
Let's just make this great for the kids. By the way, your teacher listens to a bunch of idiots on the internet. So.
Well, yeah, I will say, though, I do have an idea, though. Instead of the $1.99 reimbursement, could I possibly interest you in a babysitting mama doll?
Here's the thing. We have made it clear.
A diaper almost never worn.
Maybe just a diaper.
Yeah.
I promise it's unused. I promise.
Has come into contact with the very phablet possessed by John Lindemann.
To be fair, we have identified in the past the origin of the song because it's come up.
Yeah.
But I would like to counter-program with the comment that I'm sure is 100% serious. Now playing is the pinnacle of audio entertainment, regardless of the format or time period. The finest orchestral symphonies in the world can only bask in awe of the greatness of Now Playing. If I were to paint an analogy, I would perhaps compare Now Playing to one of Beethoven's finest pieces.
Preach.
However, even this would be an insult to the majestic spectacle of the Now Playing segment.
Peach.
When artists across the world hear Now Playing, they immediately lay down their instruments, cameras, paintbrushes, knowing once and for all that their relatively petty triflings can no longer be considered art in light of this perfected paradigm. You should be paying us, basically.
You did not write that, James.
I didn't.
That's a comment from an actual listener of the show.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's from Neil Gaff, and it's very, very... It's actually explicitly...
Factual?
No,
is that the word you're looking
for? He explicitly says that it's sarcasm.
I disagree. I think, he's being sarcastic about that being sarcasm, yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's saying it's possible...
To me, it's...
He's saying it's possible to be sarcastic on the internet, but apparently missed it.
I appreciate that heartfelt flattery. I mean...
Yeah, I mean... I don't appreciate it. We need more. Like, that's... I feel like that's being kind of wishy-washy about how good what we do.
It's the tip of the iceberg. I mean, you know that there's a groundswell of support out there. It's the silent majority, if you will.
I know every week when you hear Now Playing, at some point you start to tear up just a little bit.
Just a bit. I do it too.
I want you to bottle those tears every week.
Usually I'm tearing up when it's not actually in the show.
I want you to bottle those tears every week, and then at the end, like once you filled that bottle up, a couple weeks, go ahead and just mail it to the orphans. Just mail it. Like,
not us. I do not want to have any bodily fluid mailed to me. Please do not do that.
James is not
advocating for that, let me repeat.
Actually, I am now advocate. Mail them to John Lindemann.
No! Do not.
Mail it to John Lindemann, but hide it inside of a babysitting mama doll.
Smuggling human tears inside of a baby.
That would not be fair.
Great.
I'd be like, oh my god, I had another one.
If you think about it, every baby is full of human tears.
I'm glad that RFN has now turned into a plot line from an episode of Archer.
I'd be like, oh my gosh, she has a friend. Oh.
And she's full of tears.
Let's pray.
Now
John,
I have two diapers.
John, that's racist.
All right. Well, I tell you what. I have something in common with Now Playing in that I'm going to ask our listeners to please go to NintendoWorldReport.com to get the link to vote on Retroactive and to get the link to send us an email for the next episode and many episodes after that. The address, of course, is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And if you're not near a computer, smartphone, or piece of paper to write that down or to type it up,
this is a podcast. You can
always
you can
find a link to send us an email in that article, the RFN article over at the website. So please do that. And we will announce next week the winner of the Retroactive poll. Or even before that, if you follow us on our social media accounts, we'll announce it as soon as we know, as soon as the voting is closed on Wednesday, April 2nd. We will announce it on Facebook.com/RadioFreeNintendo and Twitter.com/RFNPodcast. Or you can follow @RFNPodcast. Thanks for listening, everybody. We hope you had as much fun this week as we did. And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Bye.
Choose the appropriate size of diapers.
Say goodbye, Wappy. It won't make any noise. Damn it! Useless!
Wappy is crappy. Hey, oh, hey, John.
Well, hey there, Johnny. What's going on?
You don't get a second bite of the apple. You said you already introed him.
A second bite of the apple, this forbidden fruit. The forbidden fruit that is John Lindemann.
The forbidden fruit of your bald-ass head, yeah.
James, do you just, like, pick one apple, take one bite, and then throw it away, and then grab another apple?
You know what? Because I got fat stacks to the ceiling, son.
Henry VIII style right there. It's eating the chicken and just throwing
apples.
It.
Yeah. You know what I do? I make sure to land it in mud so people go, like, look at this. You can't even eat the rest of this you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
It's covered in, like, botulism now.
Like, hell, I can't.